Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. 1-800-Flowers is giving guys everywhere an awesome incentive to order their Valentine's bouquets early. Right now, 1-800-Flowers is offering up to 40% off their best-selling bouquets and gifts, but only while supplies last. Go to 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. All right, glad you're with us. Sean Hannity Show, top story of the day, Trump getting tougher. And it's driving the left insane, and I'm loving every minute of it. So it was about 9:16 p.m. last night when he fired the acting attorney general who defied him, was insubordinate on his migrant travel ban of the seven countries, not Muslim countries, as Chuck Todd. It's not a religious test, Chuck Todd. How does Chuck Todd keep his job? How do any of these people at CNN keep their jobs? If I were as guilty as they are, even I'm an opinion host of media malpractice and factual inaccuracies and outright propaganda, distortion and collusion, I'd be fired. It's unbelievable. But anyway, I want to start with a message today. And I know some of you are watching the snowflake superstorm and watching Chucky cry and watching the protest, and you're getting nervous and the firing last night, and you're a little worried about things. I'm going to explain and go big picture here today and tell you why none of what you're watching and seeing, none of what they're reporting is ever going to matter in the end if, and I'll explain what the if is in a second. Anyway, so Sally Yates is an Obama holdover, and she made the decision unilaterally ordering her Justice Department that she's only temporarily in charge. She wanted to make a show. She knew she'd be fired, not to defend Donald Trump's executive order. For the 90-day ban on entry by to the U.S. by citizens from only seven predominantly Muslim countries. It doesn't impact 90% of Muslims worldwide. So for Chuck Todd to say and the former president to say, Obama, didn't I tell you, Obama is stewing. Obama is livid. For Obama to endorse all the protesting, for Obama to say it's a religious test, Obama can't stand what he is watching unfold. It's going to be in 100 days, well, 90 from now, or 89. In 89 days, 90% of what he has done in the last 8 years is going to be wiped away clean. And it will be like he never existed, except for the failure, which is the accumulation of more debt than every other president before him combined. And the left-wing, radical leftist, alt-radical left judges that he put on the bench. Besides that, everything that Obama believes in is gone. Of course he wants the protesters to go out there. Of course he wants chaos. This is Alinsky rule for radicals 101. This is who he is. Obama's going to, he will not be able to control himself. It's going to be very entertaining. Number one, he doesn't have the class that George W. Bush showed him. Number two, he is, in his heart of hearts, a rigid radical. That's why he ruled through executive action, executive orders. Well, that just makes it easier for the next person to come in and overturn it all. Now, so anyway, so Trump did, I will argue that when we see this event last night through the prism of history with Sally Yates, it's going to be viewed as a Reagan-Patco moment when he fired the air traffic controllers and said, get back to work or you're all going to be fired. Nobody believed he'd fire him, and they fired all of them. And those that defied his order to go back to work. And it's going to be also interpreted for what it is, a position of strength. It's going to be viewed worldwide as this guy means what he says what he means, and he's not afraid to stand up and do what a good executive should do. She was insubordinate. She was making a political play, trying to embarrass the president. Anyway, so they put out a statement last night, apparently offends many at MSNBC. The statement was perfect. The acting attorney general, Sally Yates, has betrayed the Department of Justice by refusing to enforce a legal order designed to protect the citizens of the United States. The order was approved as to form and legality by the Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel. In other words, it's a legal order. The Department of Justice recognizes it as such, and she just decided as an Obama administration appointee that she wasn't going to uphold it because she has a political view and liberals don't believe in obeying the law. And that's That was Obama's mandate to, as it relates to immigration laws in the country. Anyway, so the president put in, and part of this is also rooted in the obstructionism that is nonstop now. And I'll get to that in a second, but calling for tougher vetting for individuals traveling from seven dangerous places, there's nothing extreme about it. I'll tell you what is extreme is how many of these snowflakes, how many of these spoiled Hollywood superstar brats, you know, the Madonnas and the Ashley Judds and the Ashton Kutchners and whatever the Meryl Streeps of the world, you know, they all have their private bodyguards with guns. They all have their many, many mansions. You never know where they are, all gated and hidden from public view. They all travel around on their private airplanes, so their lives are pretty protected in the bubble that they live in. But for the rest of us, for the rest of America, sorry, we don't have the convenience that they have. Anyway, so he made an appointment, Dania Buente, a U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia, to serve as acting attorney general. And by the way, a Democratic appointee. Anyway, who said, I am honored to serve President Trump in his role until Senator Sessions is confirmed. I will defend and enforce the laws of our country to ensure that our people and our nation are protected, from the new acting attorney general. And you would think there's a certain level of hysteria that is now with every single Trump announcement. And there are so many of them. Now, if the Senate was an obstructionist, if the Senate did what the Republicans did for Obama back in 2009, and that was pass and approve and expedite the people that he wants in his cabinet, this wouldn't have been a problem because Jeff Sessions would have been the attorney general. And Democrats are using every Senate rule they possibly can to delay action in committees on three separate Trump cabinet picks. Munchin for Treasury Secretary, Congressman Price for Health and Human Services, and Senator Jeff Sessions as the Attorney General. And for Munchin and Price, Democrats simply refused to show up for a vote on the Senate Finance Committee. Under Senate rules, you need a majority of the committee to be there in person, plus at least one person from the other party. No votes allowed that feature only one party. And for Sessions, Democrats extended debate until 2 p.m. in the Judiciary Committee. Then they invoked the two-hour rule to end today's work before a vote could be taken. Senator Grassley said he will reconvene the committee on Wednesday morning, and Republicans threatening to hold the Senate in session into the weekend to get the nominees confirmed, because all of this is a bunch of crybaby, whiny Chuck Schumer Democrats that are going to obstruct. Now it's going to get worse. And I want to go back to, as you're viewing all of this, I know many of you are getting nervous. Many of you are getting worried. Many of you are somewhat concerned. I just want to say, let not your heart be troubled. Donald Trump, and this I have confirmed, I don't know who the nominee is, but it will be from the list that he gave us before the election took place. He said he wants to appoint people like Scalia and Justice Clarence Thomas to the Supreme Court. So that seemed to be three finalists. We'll get into that in a second. But they are all on the list that he gave you. You know, Garish may be one of the guys. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, if you watch what is happening, the meltdown on every single issue he ran on, this is going to be the reaction. I told you before I went on vacation in December, you better be ready and buckle up, because every agenda item of the president is going to result in a left-wing meltdown. Now, one of the reasons this is so good is because you get to see how radicalized the party of Obama and Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer are. This is the base of the Democratic Party. There's a reason Black Lives Matter, their endorsement was important to Hillary. There's a reason that Code Pink is loved by the Democrats. There's a reason Occupy Wall Street identifies with the Democrats. In other words, these radical groups. So when Donald Trump fulfills the promise and wants to vet refugees, this is the reaction you're going to get. If you think that's bad, wait till he makes his announcement tonight, and you're going to see smearing and slander and besmirchment and character assassination, the likes of which you probably haven't seen since Clarence Thomas or Robert Bork. That's how the left operates. when I talked to a high-ranking member in Congress today, I won't say who, and it was actually a call that gave me really great confidence about what their plans are for the economy. That includes energy independence. That includes they're going to go big. That includes the corporate tax rate that will be lowered to between 15 and 20%. There's a possibility the trillions that are going to be repatriated are even going to be lower than 10%. And everything that was promised by Trump and by others is going to happen. And I got a lot of the details, and it made me feel good. But since Trump's been the president, federal agencies, you know, he instructed federal agencies to minimize the burdens on Obamacare. In other words, you're not going to be beholden to the penalty. He called for the executive branch to streamline and expedite environmental reviews and approvals for infrastructure products. He moved to suspend federal dollars for sanctuary cities. We have an update on that coming up later in the program. He directed the government to start building the border wall. He enacted the first step in extreme vetting. He created new ethics rules to limit lobbying for people who have served in his administration. He mandated the elimination of two regulations for every new regulation created. He has indefinitely suspended the mortgage rate reduction for the FAH. In other words, this is one of the last moves Obama made. We can't afford it, and it would basically be giving free money to people from the government. He ordered federal agencies to stop creating any new regulations. He officially withdrew the U.S. from TPP. He implemented a freezing on hiring of federal civilian employees across the board in the executive branch, with the exception of the military and in limited circumstances. He reinstated the Mexico City policy, preventing taxpayer dollars from supporting countries that perform abortions with our money, invited the Trans-Canada XL Keystone Pipeline project to go forward to promptly resubmit their application, the same with the Dakota Access Pipeline. He declared that all pipeline work should use U.S. materials and steel. He called on the Commerce Secretary to reduce the regulatory burdens affecting domestic manufacturing. He called on the rebuilding of our U.S. military. He ordered the Defense Secretary to develop a new plan to defeat ISIS. And he reorganized the National Security Council in the process of expediting all of these efforts so that we'll be ready. Now, here's the bottom line. They want him to fail. Every agenda item he clicks off, they're going to act the exact same way. And you'll see more crying, and you'll see more hysteria, and you'll see more snowflake superstorms than you've ever dreamed. But if he's successful, which is my point, and fulfills every promise, and creates jobs, fixes the economy, and makes us more secure, he'll win 40-plus states for re-election. So none of this acting out is going to matter, is my point.
Bringing jobs back to America and getting America back to work. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
Go through the 10 days of Trump, and you can understand why the left is acting the way they are. They have to be scared to death. Here's their greatest fear. If Donald Trump keeps his promises and does it expeditiously, if Republicans repeal, replace Obamacare, you can't make it any worse. Guaranteed to be improvements. If they literally incentivize, and we can create millions of jobs in this country. I don't know how many millions, by lowering the corporate tax rate. If you go big, you repatriate the trillions overseas, you go energy independent, eliminating Obamacare is going to be like a tax cut for every American family. You vet refugees and you build the wall for safety. And energy is huge. Millions of jobs can be created, and the added benefit that we don't rely on nations that hate our guts anymore for the lifeblood of our economy. You do all of these things, and then let's say we are able to send education back to the states, charter schools, choice in education, especially kids that are trapped in failing government schools where drugs and gangs and no education is rampant, then I would argue that you've got Donald Trump's not going to be judged by the media. He's not going to be judged by the snowflakes. If Donald Trump keeps his promises and does what he says he's going to do and doesn't back down, and the country's safer and the economy's better, and people in poverty on food stamps and out of the labor force see their lives improving and opportunity is now open to them, and education gets better, especially for kids that we have absolutely neglected in inner cities, which is a national disgrace and embarrassment. He will be judged on that. If he appoints an originalist tonight to the Supreme Court that believes in the fidelity of the Constitution and separation of powers and co-equal branches of government, that is what he is going to be judged by. If he gets to run on, I created X millions of jobs. If he runs on, I stopped the Supreme Court from going radical left. I built the wall I told you I was going to build. I repealed Obamacare, and now our health care system is cheaper with better coverage available for all. If I have now lowered our dependence on foreign oil and we created X number of jobs. If he does those basic things, I fixed the broken VA. I built up our military so any vulnerability we ever had has now been taken care of. If I have taken on ISIS and these are the areas in which I have been successful in my attempt to defeat them, that is it. All the protests don't matter. Chuck Schumer's crying won't matter. It's not going to matter because he'll win an overwhelming majority of the American people over, because that will be government for the first time in a long time working for people with policies that are rooted in common sense and success, and he's acting like an executive and getting it done. That's what he will be judged on. There are some things in life we prefer to delay, but you know what? Seeing your wife, your girlfriend, the women you love smile, well, that should not be on the list. Now, this year, I'm planning ahead with 1-800-Flowers.com. They are the official florist of Valentine's Day, and 1-800-Flowers has a wide selection of beautiful rose bouquets, and the best part is they start at just $29.99. Now, these breathtaking roses from 1-800-Flowers, they're all picked at their peak. They're shipped overnight to ensure freshness and, of course, your loved one's amazement. Now, simply pick your delivery date. Let 1-800-Flowers handle the rest. 1-800-Flowers. They have exclusive offers just for you, Sean Hannity listeners. Today's offer is 18 red roses for only $29.99. You can upgrade to 24 roses for $10 more, only while supplies last. So when it comes to Valentine's Day, don't settle for anything less than 1-800-Flowers.com to get amazing Valentine's Day deals like 18 red roses for just $29.99. Upgrade to 24 roses for $10 more, while supplies last. Go to 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. Why wait to wow? Order now.
Greetings from the great state of Indiana. I'm Congressman Andre Carson. Not only do I represent Indiana's 7th Congressional District very proudly, but I happen to be a Muslim and a former police officer.
Thank you very much for coming out. Is the sound working?
Okay.
Got it? The sound working? It's not on? Is somebody going to deal with this? Look at that moon. It's a new moon. Can you hear now? Can't hear?
Bring it closer.
Can you hear now? No, that doesn't do any good. Shall we sing "This Land Is Your Land" again until they get the sound working?
This land was made for you and me.
The order will make us unsafe. The order will make us inhumane.
Introduce the real people. I'll do the real people now.
Are they here? Where are they?
It's another Democrat. They can't even get a mic running. They can't get a website up running without paying billions of dollars, and they can't even get a mic. This land, should we sing "This Land Is Your Land" again? I have nothing really important to say, and you can't hear me anyway, and as much crowd noise, nobody seems to care that I'm there. There was a great analysis in the Washington Post, of all places, about how the Democrats are in real danger of becoming a regional party, and it shows two maps. And what it shows, when you add up the votes in the presidential election and you add New York, Massachusetts, California, Hillary Clinton got 64.6% of the vote in those three states. Trump, got 35.4%. Now, that was 15 million votes for Hillary, 8 million votes for Trump. If you look at the other 47 states, Trump had 55,000 and Hillary had about 51,000. And in that sense, this is a party that is dominated by the extreme hard left. And that is where their appeal lies. And so, again, I go back to all of this, you know, protesting and all of this nonsense that they're involved in is not going to impact any American if Trump follows through with what he keeps doing in his checklist and fulfilling every promise. And my answer to that is it's rooted in my belief in conservatism. If you cut taxes to 15% for corporations, 20%, 20-some-odd percent down from 40 or 50% for small businesses, and you cut personal rates down for every level, and half of America still doesn't pay any federal income tax, and you become energy independent and you eliminate Obamacare, you are opening the door for massive growth in the economy and job creation in the economy, allowing repatriated money in trillions of dollars potentially to the country. All of that is money that is going to go to the economy, and that is going to impact the average American. And the idea here is government is supposed to serve us. And if they serve us, that means they get regulations out of the way. And Trump is promising an elimination of 75% at least. And then you have tax incentives for businesses to want to come back here and build factories and manufacturing centers. And then that, a lot of our products can go abroad and you get better trade deals on top of it. It's all going to be good. And for the Democrats, you know, Mitch McConnell even lashed out at Senate Democrats for delaying all of Trump's cabinet, accusing them of causing the chaos here. It's time that they get over the fact they lost the election, McConnell said. Asked about the statements about Price and Manchin and others, and Manchin and others, that he said that they're manufacturing things and they just don't want Trump's picks to get up and running. I'll just quote Obama, their elections have consequences. And so, you know, what did Donald Trump do today? Nobody was paying attention to it. But Donald Trump actually moved forward with Rudy Giuliani and others to deal with the issue of cybersecurity, which this country desperately needs. Add that to the list of things he's checking off his list. And meanwhile, Democrats are fighting each other and they're arguing over who's responsible, Hillary or Obama, for the election loss. There was a Daily Caller piece today. You got Clinton's staff is furious over her loss, and more than anything, they're blaming Obama. Clinton's aides insist Obama was the biggest reason she lost. It definitely was a big reason, but they think the lack of support was more harmful than her scandals and Russian interference in the election and the FBI, James Comey's investigation, as if it's James Comey's fault that Hillary Clinton had a private server that was illegal set up in a mom and shop pop shop in a bathroom closet. That's not James Comey's fault either. So if you look at this first week and the success that I just outlined for you in the last half hour, it is the magnitude of which has got to scare Democrats, because their only hope at this point is that Donald Trump fails, because otherwise there's really no need for them. And Obama attacking Trump 10 days into the White House just tells you that he senses what I knew he would eventually get, that 90% of the time that he spent in Washington was a waste of time and will be undone in 100 days. And that's not going to sit well with him. By the way, Dubai's security chief, I think I mentioned this yesterday, he's backing the Trump ban of travel from the seven Muslim countries. Interesting, that's a Muslim country. You know, we have Jeff Sessions, when he was a senator back in December 15, he put out a voluntarily admitted immigrants implicated in terrorist activity within the United States. He talked about a refugee from Uzbekistan convicted of providing material support and money to a designated foreign terrorist organization. And the Department of Justice, according to them, also procured bomb-making materials. Well, we let this guy into our country because we don't vet them. An immigrant from Albania who applied and received lawful permanent resident status, he got 16 years in prison for giving over $1,000 to terrorist organizations in Afghanistan and attempting to join a radical jihadist insurgent group in Pakistan. We let him in, too. An immigrant from Egypt, who was subsequently granted U.S. citizenship, charged with providing, conspiring to provide material support to ISIS for aiding and abetting a New York college student in receiving terrorist training from ISIS. an immigrant from India who applied and received lawful permanent resident status by virtue of his marriage to an American citizen, indicted in federal court on charges of conspiring to provide thousands of dollars to Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, and in order to assist them in their global jihad. And he had one conspiracy to commit bank fraud. You got a second immigrant from India, married to a U.S. citizen, brother of the individual listed above, also indicted on charges of conspiring to provide thousands of dollars to Al-Qaeda. An immigrant from Pakistan, entered the United States. I mean, I can go on forever here with all of these attacks. You know, lawful resident, killed 14 people. Oh, that was the case of what happened in San Bernardino. A son of Pakistani immigrants with a Pakistani bride, murdering 14 workers and wounding 24 others. I went through all of the attacks yesterday on the program from 9/11. I went through the list of intelligence officials who worked under Obama that all said ISIS will infiltrate the refugee population. Why is this a debate? My question is, why are so many politicians, Chuck Schumer included, Hillary Clinton included, former President Obama included, why were they so willing to gamble with your life? The people that themselves have armed guard protection. You don't have such a luxury. Most Americans don't have a luxury. And Obama chiming in, he can't control himself. He had his opportunity. He had his 8 years. I mean, just show just a smidgen of the class that George W. Bush showed him. Remember Anwar al-Awlaki, an American, and a Yemeni imam, Islamic lecturer. You know, it turns out that refugees from the very same terrorist states that are restricted under the Trump terrorist immigration ban have quite a history of terrorist activity in the U.S. Now, instead of the breathless hysteria that Donald Trump fired an insubordinate interim attorney general, maybe CNN, maybe ABC, CBS, and NBC, maybe the New York Times, maybe they all ought to be informing you about who this Yemeni imam was, this Islamic lecturer was, because U.S. officials said he was a senior recruiter and motivator who was involved in the planning of terrorist operations for Al-Qaeda. Ohio guy who traveled to Syria and trained alongside terrorists, then returned to the U.S. with plans to attack a military base or a prison, according to a federal indictment. That was the case of Sheikh Mohammed, a U.S. citizen originally from Somalia, wanted to kill 3 or 4 American soldiers, execution style. Al-Awlaki, he spoke with and preached to 3 of the alleged 9/11 hijackers. You know, when at some point, when do we learn our lesson? After what happened in Ohio State, after what happened in the Minnesota Mall, after what happened in New Jersey at the Seaside bombings, after what happened in the Orlando Pulse nightclub, after what happened in Philadelphia with the policeman being shot, or San Bernardino, or the U.S. Merced stabbings, or the Chattanooga, Tennessee military facility shooting, or the Garland, Texas art exhibit shooting, or the New York City hatchet attack, or the terrorist attack 3 in Washington, 1 in New Jersey in the same time in July of 2014, or the Boston bombers, the Sarnoff brothers, or the Fort Hood shooting and Major Hassan, or the Army Recruitment Office shooting in Little Rock, Arkansas, or the Seattle Jewish Federation shooting, or the SUV attack in Chapel Hill in North Carolina, or the LA airport shooting. You know, where's the news media telling you all about this? Americans get it by a 2-to-1 margin. They support what the president's doing. Nobody in the media is telling you it's not a Muslim ban, that there are 40 plus other Muslim majority countries, including Indonesia, Turkey, and Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and so many others that are not part of the ban. They're not telling you that it's temporary. They're not telling you that it was based on security reviews conducted by Obama's own deputies. They're not telling you that that Obama banned immigration from Iraq and Carter banned it from Iran. They're not giving you context and texture and history to what this decision is. They don't care. Why in God's name should Donald Trump ever apologize for inconveniencing a few people to ensure that he fulfills his obligation as commander-in-chief to keep the people in this country safe? Why would he apologize for that? 90% of Muslims worldwide are exempt from this. But that's not how the media spins this. Of the 325,000 people from foreign countries on the day this weekend where everyone's going insane, only 109 people actually were delayed, and most of which got in right away. You know, the news media, you know, Chuck Schumer crying like a whining little crybaby. You know, the five-year-old child was detained briefly at Dulles Airport because of the immigration safety plan. Okay, it's regrettable. I understand it. It's not exactly, I prefer that there be no evil in the world. I prefer that Nazism, fascism, Imperial Japan, and radical Islam never exist. But what about the 8-year-old Martin Richard? You probably don't know him. Anyone in this audience know who Martin Richard is? Well, he was 8 years old, and he was murdered by the Sarnoff brothers in the Boston Marathon bombing. And the murderers of this kid, Martin Richard, first gained entry into the country under the asylum program. And Martin died after nails, pellets, and improvised shrapnel mutilated his small 8-year-old body, ripping him wide open. Yes, one child was inconvenienced this weekend. The other child was butchered. Is that a good perspective? By the way, where's Saudi Arabia? They've got 100,000 air-conditioned tents to help all these people that go to Mecca for the Hajj every year, and they sit there empty. Why can't they take them in? And what's so lacking in compassion? If Donald Trump says he's in favor of safe zones in Syria that would provide food and clothing and medicine and supplies and baby formula and protect people, and then they can go back to their own homes when the civil war's over. It's, you know, what does anyone talk about the Chuck Schumer back in 2015 himself? Little Chucky said the refugee pause may be necessary. He wasn't crying then. And what about just before Obama left office? What about all the Cuban refugees that were sent back? I didn't hear anybody crying back then either. There's such duplicity and hypocrisy. How many more times are you going to turn into the Fox News channel? Fox News alert. A gunman screaming, Allahu Akbar, just shot up X numbers of people. How many times do we have to watch this and say the words, our thoughts and prayers go out to the families, which they do. But how about we protect the families so we don't have to say that anymore? Trump had, well, you know, 57 times more coverage than Obama's Cuba ban. Oh, did anyone even remember the Cuba ban? No, because the media didn't go insane about the Cuba ban. And there's such duplicity and hypocrisy, and the news media and journalism in America is absolutely dead. ABC even reported back in 2013, headline, exclusive, U.S. may have let dozens of terrorists into the country as refugees. Oh, Hannity, how dare you quote ABC for the position that you support?
Hannity knows you're tired of government overreach and Big Brother watching your every move. Now it's time to take back America. This is The Hannity Show.
Supreme Court justice will be chosen by President Trump tonight. It doesn't matter who he picks. It has come down to three people, but it's at the end of the day, Gorsuch, Pryor, or any of the people that he has on his list, they're not going to get through with this in terms of getting. It's either going to be Neil Gorsuch or Gorsuch, Thomas Hardiman, or William Pryor. It's going to be one of those three. But Senate Democrats have already said they will reject, even though there was a national referendum in this election on this, whoever Donald Trump picks. Question is, will Senator McConnell pull the Harry Reid maneuver? That's the big question that we need answered. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two go-anywhere pillows. Now MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two Go Anywhere pillows for 40% off. And that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow.
What type of cruel attitude based on demagoguery and fear does that to people? This is probably the most incompetent, ineffective, unconsciously provocative, and dangerous action of any government I've ever seen. To drop this on SeaTac Airport with no notice of how to handle this, I got to tell you, these people couldn't run a two-car funeral. And it's very disappointing to see our federal government create chaos in our nation.
What about the law here? I mean, is it your opinion or your general counsel's opinion that what was issued today, in a legal sense, is legal, or will you challenge it?
Oh, we're ready to challenge for sure. If there is action taken under the executive order to take funding away from New York City, we'll be in court an hour later to challenge it, because we believe, in my corporation counsel, Zach Carter's former U.S. attorney, feels strongly. Look at the executive order. It's vague. There's many points in it that could contradict each other. There's a point where they exempt law enforcement.
Yep.
At the same time as the funding that would be cut off comes from Justice Department and Homeland Security would go to, obviously, in our case, the NYPD. They say everything has to be done in accordance with existing law. Well, existing law does not allow for funding cutoffs broad brush. The Supreme Court decision in the Sebelius case 2012, Justice Roberts said you cannot hold a gun, quote unquote, hold a gun to the head of states and cities and take away their funding across the board for other purposes. So the executive order is vague, contradictory in many ways, and it's something we feel we can fight.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We're looking at the legal and constitutional right of the president to enforce the laws regarding immigration and the travel ban, and why it was the right time for President Trump to order the firing of Sally Yates last night. Look, this was obviously a political move on her part. I'd love to know who she spoke to take this stand, but when she said she would not defend his executive order imposing the 90-day ban on entry to the U.S. by citizens of seven predominantly Muslim countries, although that's not really the issue here, because 90% of Muslims worldwide were not mentioned as part of this ban. These are specific countries that the Obama administration had identified as having particular ties to radical terrorism. So it shouldn't have been that hard. Anyway, so she was to be the successor until the confirmation of Jeff Sessions as Attorney General, which of course the Democrats have been slow walking, as we also discussed in the last hour. And anyway, the acting Attorney General, as they pointed out, refused to enforce what was a legal order designed to protect the citizens of the United States. The order was approved in terms of its form and legality by the Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel, the same Department of Justice that she was supposed to be, you know, running in the interim. So it was clearly a political move. Anyway, Jeff Sessions will be in the seat soon, but talking about this, it was purely political, and obviously this was insubordination at an extremely high level, but more importantly, it was a political move to try and embarrass the president. Remember, everything Democrats now want to do for the rest of their days is embarrass the president. Joining us now, Philip Holloway, founder of Holloway Law Group, based in Cobb County, Georgia, former prosecutor, police officer. He has a wide range of experience as it relates to legal and law enforcement matters. Philip Haney's back with us. Remember, Philip was one of the founding members of the Department of Homeland Security, author of the book See Something, Say Nothing. Welcome both of you back to the program. Philip, we'll lean on your legal expertise to start here, but legally, this is not even an issue. Any intelligent attorney clearly sees this as all being legal on every front, and the media characterization of this has been purposely false.
The executive order was 150% legal, Sean. I think that Sally Yates planned to do this to sabotage the president at her very first opportunity. There's really only two ways to look at this. Sally Yates is either incompetent or she's insubordinate, or perhaps even both. Even a D-minus law school graduate can usually think of some legal argument in defense of any given legal issue, and this one isn't even close. Congress gives the legislature plenary power, that's unbridled power, to control the borders and to control immigration, and through statutory law, 18 U.S.C. Section 1182F, they say that the president, when the president finds that the entry of any alien or any class of aliens could be detrimental to the interests of the United States, that he may, by proclamation, do exactly what he did. So if Sally Yates wants us to believe that she can't find some reason to stand up in court and defend this, she's incompetent or she's insubordinate. Either way, she has to go. The president cannot allow an agency head to behave this way.
And I'll tell you, it gets even worse, and this goes to what I say, that journalism is dead and that we have a crisis of information in the country, because you have so many people in the country that are in the media that keep calling this something that it never was, never meant to be, never would be, which was a Muslim ban. You know, Chuck Todd, for one, saying, well, Trump established a religious test for refugees from Muslim countries. Filippini, nothing could be further from the truth. Otherwise, I assume the 40 other majority Muslim countries would have been added to the list, right?
Well, not only that, there's a reason why some of these countries have been designated special interest countries. We call them SICs. There's a list of them. And in 2015, the U.S. Southern Command, General Mattis was commander of U.S. Southern Command from 2010 to 2013. They published statistics in September of 2016 that saw a total of 331,000 migrants enter the southwestern border between the U.S. and Mexico. And of that, U.S. Southern Command estimated that more than 30,000 of them were from countries of terrorist concern, a.k.a. special interest countries. So the precedent is there. The threat has been well identified for years on end. So what President Trump is doing, as my colleague said, is well within constitutional and statute law, INA, Immigration and Naturalization Authority law. He is completely within his authority to do this, and it should have been done a long time ago.
Let me ask you, Phil Haney, as one of the founding members of the Department of Homeland Security, I rarely get shocked at this point, 30 years on radio and my 21st year at the Fox News Channel. I rarely get shocked by a guest and what they tell me is happening, but the day you told me you were specifically ordered, when Obama became president, to erase and delete all of the background information, in other words, the intelligence that so many agents work so hard and diligently to get about those that may be radicalized inside the United States of America. Explain what you were told to do and what you had to do.
Well, in 2009, I was ordered by DHS hierarchy, clear up to the executive level, to do what they called modify, which was to take out all of the linking information on 820 text records, that's our intelligence records, that were particularly related to the Muslim Brotherhood Network operating in the United States. You have to keep in mind that this was 4 years before the Boston bombing. And some of the records that I had to modify at that time, taking out the linking information, was related to the Islamic Society of Boston. So there's, and the Boston Marathon bombing. So there's my first point of conflict with the administration. A bigger one happened in 2012 when they didn't come to me. They just simply deleted an entire case out of the system related to the Tablighi Jamaat network operating in the United States, including mosques like the one in San Bernardino, specifically the one in San Bernardino. They deleted the information completely out of the system in order to, what I consider, maintain plausible deniability. So they could stand in front of the American people and say, well, we did all we could. We just
So this was a CYA measure. This was a measure that if, God forbid, something happened and they weren't paying attention to people that were within the data system that so many agents worked so hard to build, then they could say, well, he's not in our data system. Therefore, how could we have possibly known? Is that the purpose?
Well, Janet Napolitano said exactly that after the Boston Marathon bombing. She said, we didn't get a ping. Well, you mean you didn't get a ping on an individual came back to the United States without a passport and a lawful permanent resident card? He lays it on the counter in front of the CBP officer. The first question the CBP officer should ask him is, Mr. Sarnaev, where's your passport? You cannot travel on an international basis on a lawful permanent resident card. He had to have a passport. So where was his passport? And why was he even admitted?
I might even ask you the most... Go ahead, finish, sir.
That kind of corrosion is reflected in those numbers that I referred to earlier And it's also reflected in a new GAO report that was just put out about 4 days ago. It's called CBP aims to prevent high-risk travelers from boarding U.S.-bound flights, but needs to evaluate program performance. In other words, they're trying, but they need a lot of improvement. And there's a whole program already in place through CBP called preclearance, where CBP officers work in ports overseas in cooperation with the governments of other countries to prevent people from boarding planes and coming into the country. And even though they prevented 10,648 people from coming in, the GAO report says there's a whole lot more room for improvement and that they have not evaluated the effectiveness of their program.
Can I ask you this question? Another example
of what Donald Trump is trying to start to do right now.
Is there any way to retrieve the information that you were told to get rid of?
I pass it on to Congress.
So in other words, Congress should have a copy of everything that you were deleting?
Yes, it's physically possible to put it back into the system. Of course, you know what will happen when that occurs, which I hope it will. It's going to set off a whole chain reaction of questions. Obviously, is going to be the first one. Do you know of any congressman?
And you don't have to mention the name if you don't want. Do you know of any congressman that you know with 100% certainty that has a copy of that which you were ordered to delete?
I will tell you that Senator Cruz, in the willful blindness hearings on the 28th of June, 2016, came as close as any member of Congress has come to actually addressing the problem. He asked specifically for that information, and you may recall what Secretary of Homeland Security said 2 days later, Jay Johnson. He didn't know me. He had not taken the time to look into my claims, and he considered it an interesting political discussion, but really about semantics and labels. So I want to ask you this, Senator Cruz, for that.
Do you know if anybody has a copy of what that which was told, that you were told to delete?
Yeah, I had the authority to give it to Congress, and I did.
So Congress definitely has a copy, which is anybody in the Trump administration aware that this information exists? In other words, you're talking about years of developing a database to protect the American people that for political purposes you were ordered to delete. You're saying that there are copies of it, so those years of hard work can be restored, is what I'm asking.
Right now they're sitting down on the bottom of the swamp. And I would like to tell President Trump, if you'd like to drain the swamp, I can tell you where some of the valves are. Let's
stay right there. Don't go anywhere, Phil Haney. I want to come back and talk more with you if we can. And Philip Holloway is with us as well. 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone number.
Ready to repeal and replace Obama's executive orders? Then you've come to the right place. The Sean Hannity Show.
All right, as I continued now, we are discussing the president obviously firing this temporary attorney general for insubordination and an unwillingness. You know, basically this lady was saying, I'm in charge. I'm going to be the president. And, you know, to watch Chuck Schumer say, this is like a Monday night massacre. No, I would say a Monday night beatdown, crybaby Schumer, because Donald Trump did exactly what any president should do. And the fallout from this is going to be to show the entire world that he means what he says and says what he means. We continue with Philip Holloway, founder of Holloway Law Group. And we're talking about the legality of it, and also Phil Haney, founding member of the Department of Homeland Security. Philip, you just heard what Philip Haney was saying, Philip Holloway, and, you know, can you imagine being ordered to erase all the information, all the data, all of the background checks, all of the classified information on potential threats within the country and being ordered to erase it?
No, Sean, it's quite shocking. That's the first I've heard it. And I'll tell you what, one of the first things that Jeff Sessions needs to do when he's confirmed, and he will be confirmed, the Democrats can delay for a few days, but he will be confirmed. I think that that ought to be the subject of a Justice Department investigation right there, because I don't know this, but there may very well be some criminal misbehavior. And if so, that needs to be rooted out. It needs to be prosecuted if it has been a crime, because this is the kind of thing that the American public needs to know about, to know what their government, and if it was the prior administration covering up this type of information that jeopardized the safety of Americans, then we need to know about it. There's outrage about the executive order as to the so-called Muslim ban, which it's not, but that's what they're calling it. If there's outrage about that, there should be at least as much, if not more, outrage about this cover-up of information. You know, hundreds of foreign nationals have been implicated in terror threats against the United States. You know, we're talking about Orlando, San Bernardino, the Boston Marathon bombing, and God forbid we have another 9/11. So the idea that the United States, as a sovereign nation, cannot take ordinary measures, not even extraordinary, but ordinary measures to protect our borders is absolutely preposterous. Sally Yates apparently made a political choice, Sean, to become a martyr for this leftist ideology. She had to know she would be fired. And, you know, Jeff Sessions, I hope that he looks into what Phil has just told us about, because that is a real, real scandal.
Philip, have you spoken to anybody within the Trump administration high enough up that this information would get to the president at this point?
Only on background, members of the transition team, but nothing in a more formal context.
It's shocking to me. Did they take it seriously? I mean, I think what needs to happen, I think you need to address the national security team of the new administration and make them aware, number one, that years of hard work can be retrieved, two, what you were ordered to do, which makes no sense whatsoever, and the reason for doing it was political, that in case something happened with one of the people on the list that you accumulated, it was a CYA on their part. But we'll have much more on this in the days and weeks to come. You're both patriots. We really appreciate you both being with us. Philip Holloway, thank you. Philip Haney, always enjoy talking to
you.
800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll get to your phone calls. Then we're going to talk to people that actually know what it's like to live in some of the countries that are on this ban list, and how this is not a Muslim ban, and how the media is lying to you. That's all coming up, and your calls, 800-941-SEAN, next. Everyone's going after poor Tom Brady. We'll get to this later in the program today, but they're going after poor Tom Brady. I think he's hated for two reasons. Number one, he's one of the best quarterbacks ever, and you just can never count this guy out. Two, he's got a beautiful model as a wife. Three, he keeps winning. Now four, he's friends with Donald Trump. That makes me like him more. You know, as somebody that likes the Jets and Giants, he's done a lot of damage to my teams over the years. So it's, listen, Eli, he's had six Super Bowl chances. He's got four rings. And the only two times he lost was to Eli Manning and the Giants. And the Jets did beat them once to get into the AFC championship game. So there's been some back and forth there. But he's always in the hunt, which just shows the magnitude and the depth of talent that he has. I don't know why people just want to hate other people because they're successful. And everyone's, oh, Tom Brady needs to denounce Donald Trump, his friend. You know, I if anyone ever said that to me, I'd double down on my friendship with somebody. You're not telling me who I can and cannot be friends with. Just because you have political differences with Donald Trump and you're part of the Snowflake Superstorm Brigade. It's ridiculous. Anyway, 800-941-SEAN, you want to be a part of this extravaganza. Lily is in Phoenix, Arizona, listening to 550 KFYI. What's up, Lily? How are you? Glad you called.
Hey, thanks, Sean. And listen, I don't think we're alone in being sick and tired of the political drama being played out over everything President Trump does. I called your show because I was so outraged over the reaction to President's executive order where some folks got detained at the airport because he promised to keep us safe. And about a year or so after 9/11, my hubby and I, U.S. citizens, were detained while going through security to take a U.S. flight back from Hawaii to the mainland. And it caused us to miss our flight to the mainland, which was the last flight that night. My husband had been very sick, and all his medicines went on the flight home. But we were stuck in Hawaii. And, you know, we didn't come unglued. We understood. We watched those towers go down, and we understood why that had to happen. You know, and so to watch these people just react so indifferently, it just outrages me. I just get really upset, and I share that with you because, you know, I listen to you all the time. So I wanted to call and tell you that because it makes me sick.
I'm going to be honest. I don't care if I get detained when I'm traveling. I honestly don't. I understand it. It's annoying. It's inconvenient.
Right.
It's really frustrating. I was traveling to London recently on British Airways, okay? That was the Julian Assange interview. And I was in Miami at the time because I was down in Florida for my vacation. I cut my vacation short so I can go to do the interview. Anyway, long story short, the lines are just so bad in terms of, first of all, I don't know how people travel the way they do. It's like people move when they go travel. I'm a one bag guy. I don't care if I'm traveling for 2 weeks or 2 days, one bag, carry on, and that's it. Maybe if I have to, a suit bag, because I can't squeeze my suit into the one small travel bag that I have. But I don't want to put anything in checking. I don't want to check one bag. So anyway, I'm watching these people, and you've got double carts. You know those big carts filled from the bottom to the top, heavy, heavy, heavy luggage. And, you look at the wife and the husband, and you can tell that four of those suitcases are just for the wife's shoes, and another's for the wife's dresses, and another's for the kids' dresses and shoes. I'm like, guys, you can get your clothes cleaned at any hotel. It's ridiculous. Or just go to a local laundromat, clean your own clothes. What's the big deal? I just can't stand the fact that people travel that way. Now, with that said, you can wand me all you want. You can frisk me all you want. You can ask me any question you want, and I'm perfectly fine answering it. It doesn't bother me. I don't mind that it takes a little extra time. It doesn't bother me one bit. And whether I traveled El Al, for example, to Israel one time, and I was on a list because I was going to interview the prime minister, and they still asked me 1,000 questions. They asked me 1,000 questions when I got to London. Why are you here? I'm here for work. What kind of work? I work in journalism. I'm here for an interview. Why are you scheduled to leave in just 6 hours? I said, because I don't feel like staying over and seeing the sights. I want to get home and sleep in my own bed. It's just standard operating procedure. And if that's what it takes to ensure the people of Great Britain or the people of Israel or wherever I'm traveling that I'm safe and secure and they don't have to worry about me being in their country, then I'm all for it. Why is this such a big deal? Now, the fact that there are terrorist training camps in many of the seven countries that the president and President Obama identified, because it was really Obama's list, then, we have to give extra scrutiny. What's the purpose? To ensure that you, the American people, are safe. I am not in favor of gambling with your life in the name of political correctness. These politicians are willing to gamble with your lives because they don't want to offend people. And then they make the argument, well, you're just incentivizing to do more. Well, that doesn't explain the Khobar Towers incident. That doesn't explain the embassy bombings in Kenya, Tanzania, the First Trade Center bombing. It doesn't explain the USS Cole. It doesn't explain 9/11. The 9/11 report said they were at war with us. We weren't at war with them. Go ahead. Shake me down. Wand me to death. I don't care. If you travel with Sweet Baby James, you're going to be wanded. It basically has a sign on his back that says, wand me and everybody with me. Anyway, it's just the way it is. Anyway, I appreciate the call, Lily. You got me worked up. Thank you. Let's go to Blake is in Florida. Blake, how are you? Glad you called.
Yeah, thanks for letting me on the show, Sean. I'm 26 years old, and I'm not brainwashed because of the voices like yours. So thanks for all you do to keep us sane. It's
a big help.
But to my point, I'd like for the media to stop being a recruiting tool for ISIS. They keep saying that President Trump's executive order can be used as a recruiting tool because ISIS will say America is banning Muslims. And one of your liberal guests yesterday said he believes there's truth in that. But in reality, there's nothing anti-Muslim about it. This isn't a Muslim ban. The media is simply lying about it. So really, their own broadcasts and articles are actually providing ISIS with a recruiting tool, not President Trump's executive order. So,
well, by them repeating, I think you're right, because by them repeating the lie, what are they doing? They're telling Muslims that America is banning Muslims, and that's not true.
Exactly. And they're providing, a video of a broadcast or a snippet from an article that they can reprint or reproduce to people over Muslim countries and say, look, the America's own media is reporting on the quote unquote fact that America is banning Muslims and hates all Muslims. And that's just simply not true.
Such a good point. What are you doing at 26 in your life? What do you do right now?
I actually work in sales. for a manufacturer that manufactures acoustical products that we sell all over the country. So, you know, just in sales, I love
you. Are you happy with what you're doing? Are you happy with what you're doing? Do you like what you're doing?
I love what I'm doing.
That's awesome. All right. Listen, I appreciate all. I wish you the best. Your life is just beginning, and in large part, the safer we leave this country, the better it's going to be for you and your kids, all right? That's my job.
Thanks,
for
Sean.
Now. All right, buddy. Appreciate it. 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. Let's go to Kate is in Atlanta. News Talk, WSB. What's going on, Kate? How are you?
Good, Sean. It's wonderful to talk with you this afternoon. And I love the interview that you had with Trump last week. That was absolutely amazing. I wanted to say you were very, very good on that. And I really love all the interviews that you do. But the next time that you have the opportunity to talk with President Trump, I was hoping you could discuss more on education and going back to the debacle of Race to the Top, which was really a bribe. And then, as you know, then it formed out into Common Core. And can you go so far as continuing those interviews with the individual cabinet members and most specifically the new
Absolutely.
Secretary of Education?
Well, I can tell you what continues this week. I will be heading out Thursday morning to interview Vice President Pence. All right. And that'll be on Hannity on Thursday night. And then Friday, we're going to head to Houston and we're going to be broadcasting from the Super Bowl location. Fox is carrying the broadcast this year, so it's going to be a lot of fun, although I'm probably not going to stay for the game. Because if I stay for the game, by the time I fly home, even if I can get a red eye, I literally get home at 7 in the morning and it just kills your whole week. I would like to stay and watch it there, but I'll come home and watch it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you so much. You made my day, Kate. I appreciate it. All my best. Let's go to Dawn is in California. Hey, Dawn, how are you? And if you become a sanctuary state, you're going to be paying more than 13.5% state income tax.
I'm going to fight it. I'm not willing to do that. Not at all. But in the meantime, I do have a great idea as a border state. I have a great idea to have Mexico indirectly pay for the wall. And that is, we can impose a 3% surcharge on all monies wire transferred to Mexico. In fact, we should impose that surcharge on all foreign money transfers. And I think these funds could go directly towards building our border wall. What do you think, Sean?
Well, listen, I think as long as Mexico pays for the wall in the end, I think I'd prefer they pay for it. I know we have to have congressional appropriations and outlay the money beforehand, and I'm just in favor of getting it started, getting it built, protecting the country, protecting our borders, vetting these refugees, and at the end of the day, the people that we do allow into the country, we will have fully vetted and know that they want to be here, that they're bringing a skill set with them, and that they'll be a benefit and a help to the country, and they're not here to blow up our malls, our schools, our workplaces, or whatever.
I couldn't agree with you more, Sean. I heard it was Kellyanne Conway say a few days ago on the news that she was even mentioning that, you know, a lot of Mexican nationals and other folks wire transfer monies out of the United States into other countries. And why not impose a tax on that, collect that tax, and that's how we make Mexico pay for the wall indirectly.
They're going to pay for it. I think it's all going to happen, from my perspective, I think it's going to happen through the renegotiation of NAFTA. And look, Mexico's more scared than anybody knows. Mexico's scared now because of, let's see, Ford, Fiat Chrysler, GM, Carrier, all these companies are pulling out because they know the regulatory environment and the tax environment in the U.S. for corporations is getting dramatically better, and they know that's going to cost them a lot of jobs, and I think they anticipate the wall is going to be built. They will be heavily incentivized to renegotiate NAFTA sooner than later, and they will. I have no doubt that that's going to happen. Anyway, I appreciate the call. Thank you. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number if you want to be a part of the program.
The final hour of the Sean Hannity Show is up next. Hang on for Sean's conservative solutions.
All right, back to our busy phones, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. Tanya is in Memphis, Tennessee, WREC. What's up, Tanya? How are you? We're glad you called.
Hello from the brand new sanctuary city of Memphis.
Great. You're going to lose a lot of tax dollars. I have every belief most of these people are going to cave. We'll see.
Let's hope. Our city is known for doing really stupid things.
so.
But well, it's a great city. I like Memphis. I really do. I have friends
like
that live in Memphis.
I just don't like the people who run Memphis. So.
By the way, my buddy, you ever watch Tim Simpson, the weather guy down there?
Yes, and I like him. I like
him a
lot.
He's a great guy. He's been a friend of mine. He's been a friend of mine since my Huntsville days.
Every single station keeps labeling this as, you know, this is everything that comes out of Trump's mouth is like Hitler, and it's like the Nazis, and we're going into this totalitarian state, and they went absolutely hog wild with the executive order and everything else. We don't even listen to local news anymore. It's that bad.
I'll be honest. I mean, I watched a little of the coverage last night when this news broke about firing the interim attorney general who was insubordinate and not following the legal authority of the president and trying to use a power play and usurp the executive power of the president. And I watched the coverage. There's a certain, I don't know, hysteria. There's a certain restlessness to their reporting. I mean, I was telling this to a guy that works at CNN that was whining about my coverage one day of his news network. And I said, with all due respect, if you just watch your own channel, you know, White Lash and all the other crap associated with it. They've been calling Trump a racist almost from day one. And now they have doubled down on just trying to hurt the president. I think the left, more than anything else, they don't understand Donald Trump. They'll never understand Trump. They don't understand the election results. They'll never understand the election results. They have been proven to be colluding with the left. And that is who they are, and they've lost all credibility, and they've delegitimized themselves. So I think the only thing they've got left in their arsenal, rather than just doing their job and telling the truth and giving us the news, is they now have doubled down on their leftist activism. And I think it's going to hurt them forever, to the point where they can never recover. That's my guess.
I wish you could find Schumer's praise of Obama when Obama did exactly the same thing that Trump is doing right now.
I think that's a good idea, or his support in 2015 for a temporary ban. That was, you know, a little over a year ago. They're so phony, they're so hypocritical, it's so political, and it's just not going to work. If Trump keeps his promises, he'll be judged by his success, not by the snowflakes. We'll continue.
Good evening, fellow SAG-AFTRA members and everyone at home and everyone in airports that belong in my America. You are a part of the fabric of who we are, and we love you and we welcome you. We also welcome you to the 23rd Annual Screen Actors Guild Awards.
To a less insane note, I'd like to say that I am a very proud member of this union, and I'm thrilled to be here tonight, and I thank the Screen Actors Guild. I want you all to know that I am the daughter of an immigrant. My father fled religious persecution in Nazi-occupied France, and I'm an American patriot, and I love this country. And because I love this country, I am horrified by its blemishes. And this immigrant ban is a blemish, and it is un-American.
We 1983 Midwesters will repel bullies. We will shelter freaks and outcasts, those who have no home. We will get past the lies. We will hunt monsters. And when we are at a loss amidst the hypocrisy and the casual violence of certain individuals and institutions, we will, as per Chief Jim Hopper, punch some people in the face when they seek to destroy the weak and the disenfranchised and the marginalized. life, and we will do it all with soul, with heart, and with joy.
Our vision of America is directly antithetical to that of President Trump. I want to specifically tonight reject his vision and affirm that America has to be better than that.
All right, glad you're with us. Sean Hannity Show. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza, news roundup, information overload. So the threat of unvetted refugees. That's what it really comes down to. Now, one interesting thing, we know the Democrats are hypocritical because we know Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, they had, well, based on the definition of the snowflakes you just heard from and others, well, they had a Muslim ban because they prevented travel or immigration from Iraq for 6 months, as did Jimmy Carter. Now, if you look, for example, the UK Telegraph today had a pretty interesting article that six of the seven on Trump's executive order, which prohibits citizens from seven countries from visiting the U.S., well, they all impose their own travel bans. According to information supplied by the International Air Transport Association, Syria, Sudan, Iran, Iraq, Yemen, and Libya, they all forbid Israeli passport holders from entering their countries, along with 10 other nations, Algeria, Bangladesh, Brunei, Kuwait, Lebanon, Malaysia, Oman, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates. Well, is that racist? Is that a Muslim ban by definition? Is that an anti-Semitic ban by definition? Where's blubbering Chuck Schumer over this? Where are the Democrats over this? And 8 of those countries, by the way, do not accept passports that contain Israeli visas. And Libya separately enforces a ban on Iranian, Syrian, and Palestinian visitors. You know, everyone's acting as though this is something new, and none of it is. Anyway, joining us now to discuss how important this is for your safety, your security. My top priority here is, and I sent this out in a tweet to Mark Cuban earlier today, there were 109 people of the 350 or 325,000 people that came on Sunday to the United States. There were 109 people that were inconvenienced. That's it. It's being so blown out of proportion. It's not a Muslim ban because there are 40 other majority Muslim countries that are not on the list, including the country with the largest Muslim population, which is Indonesia. They're not banned. And nor is, for example, India, which has a high population of Muslims, or Egypt, or Jordan, or Saudi Arabia, which frankly I think should be in the ban, or Turkey, or any of these other countries. Anyway, joining us now to discuss, we have Brigitte Gabriel, terrorism analyst, founder of Act for America, the largest national security grassroots organization in the country. Daniel Akbari is the author of Honor Killing and happened to be imprisoned by Iranian officials, also tried and tortured and imprisoned in Bulgaria because he converted to Christianity. Remember, under Islam in many countries, the penalty for conversion, apostatism, is death. Anyway, welcome both of you to the program. Brigitte, look, you've had your own experiences growing up under Islamic rule. It wasn't too good, was it?
No, it was not, Sean. And it is amazing that you mentioned the ban by different countries on Israelis visiting, for example, or even me as a Lebanese, as you mentioned, me being born and raised in Lebanon. I went to Israel, worked as a journalist, and from Israel came to the United States. So there's an Israeli stamp on my Lebanese passport that the Israeli agent stamped by accident. Because of that, for the last 30 years, I have not been able to even go back and visit my country of birth. I cannot even enter the Lebanese embassy in Washington, D.C., because they will arrest me on the spot in Washington, D.C., as a Lebanese-born citizen, simply because I have an Israeli stamp on my passport. Since then, I have not been able to get or renew my Lebanese passport because of that one incident of the mistake of me going to Israel as a journalist and flying out. And so when I see the left in the United States right now throwing a hissy fit over us trying to protect our nation with ignoring completely what other countries do. I mean, my example is a perfect example of the prejudices and the discrimination in other countries against different people. Yet we in America, just because we want to vet people coming into our country to make sure we are safe, this is what the left is doing. It's incredible.
You know, the whole thing here is this has been going on for such a long period of time. And I think the security and the safety of the American people ought to come first. And the fact that people have so overreacted to this, when we know that these specific countries were outlined by the Obama administration themselves. And we didn't even include most of the countries. We could have included many other countries as part of this ban if we wanted to be even more thorough in our vetting. And I assume over time that may happen. It's also a temporary moratorium. It's not going to be forever. Anyway, what's your reaction to all this, Danielle Akbari?
Thank you so much for having me on. Yeah, thank you so much. The thing is, for me as an Iranian, as dear Bridget said, if you have Israeli visa in your passport, if I would go to Iran, I want to directly go to jail. When I came to the United States, I came to find freedom. Many Iranians are here, but the problem is that Iranian regime calls the United States the Great Satan and never, ever shares any information about any criminal or any terrorist that might come to the United States. So I have been denied my basic fundamental right to become a Christian. If I go to Iran, I'm going to be executed. But they expect many, many things from Americans. I told them, what rights you have in the United States, or you expect Americans to let you in, that you don't have such a thing in Mongolia? Americans are just nice, and it's a favor. It's not a right to come to the United States. You come to the United States because Americans love others. Americans do that favor. You don't have such a right. Don't have that sense of entitlement that I'm entitled to come to the United States and bring my destructive ideas and try to change American values and make them the same as a third world country. If those ideas had worked, you wouldn't come to the United States. You cannot bring those destructive ideas and try to change American values. You have to come here and assimilate. You have to come here and learn.
You know, the broader issue here is I don't think there is even a basic fundamental understanding of radical Islamists. And we're not talking about all Muslims, but radical Islamists. And the true practice of Islam in some of these very specific countries, and what radical Islamists really want, and that is a worldwide caliphate. It's not about assimilating to the West. It's not about assimilating in Europe, assimilating in the United States. Isn't it the hope and dreams of some of these radicals, Brigitte, that they want the entire world to convert to Islam or they will die, that they want Islam and Sharia to be the worldwide law, not just in their own countries? They want to proselytize this to the world and demand the world accept their view.
This is exactly what they want, Sean, and they are telling us exactly what they want. They issue press releases about it. They put it on the internet. They even record videos about it and send it to Al Jazeera to air worldwide. They want us to know what their objective is. And ISIS already came out and said, we already have put ISIS operatives within the refugee population and sent them to Western countries to basically implement exactly that, the spreading of the radical ideology of ISIS worldwide. And by the way, this whole issue about people saying, well, they're poor refugees, they want to come here to assimilate. They do not want to come here to assimilate. We now have documented at least 10 refugees who came to the United States on refugee status who have committed terrorist attacks against America. And I will just give you a few examples. Somali refugee, as we all remember, Abdul Razak Ali Artan went on a jihadi stabbing rampage at Ohio State University. In 2016, an Iraqi refugee, Omar Faraz Saeed Al-Hardan, was accused of planning to bomb a local mall in Texas. In September 2016, a Somali refugee named Dahir Adan went on a stabbing spree at a mall in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Another Somali refugee, Mohammed Osman Mohammed, was arrested for planning to blow up a Christmas tree lighting ceremony in Oregon back in 2010. In 2012, Abdul Latif Ali Al-Busari, an Iraqi refugee, bombed the Social Security office in Arizona. Two Iraqi refugees were convicted for having aided Al-Qaeda in Iraq to kill American servicemen. These so-called refugees lied on their applications, and as a proof that the screening process is ineffective, were allowed entry without issue. And
all right, I got to take a break. I'm going to hold you both over. You know, it's fascinating to me that Saudi Arabia, for example, has 100,000 air-conditioned tents sitting empty. They won't take in any Syrian refugees. And we also know that even some outspoken members in security, the UAE and other places, are saying that Donald Trump did the right thing. We'll explain that when we get back. And also, we'll get to your calls at the bottom of this hour. 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone number.
putting America and Americans first. Now there's a novel idea. You're on the Sean Hannity Show.
All right, as we continue our discussion about extreme vetting of refugees, we continue with Brigitte Gabriel and Daniel Akbari. I ask you this, Daniel. You know, Saudi Arabia has 100,000 air-conditioned tents. They're sitting empty. And by the way, they're located roughly 2,150 miles from Syria. And they're only used a few days a year to house pilgrims on their way to Mecca for the Hajj. Why aren't they picking up some of the refugees? Why, for example, is it viewed as not being compassionate if Donald Trump is willing to pay for a military safe zone with other countries that provides food, water, medicine, medical supplies, tents, baby formula? What's so horrible or lacking in compassion by doing that? And then when the civil war is over, people can go back to their own country.
Yeah, it stuns me when I see many Islamic countries, they are so generous paying for guns and bombs and for terrorists. But when it comes to humanitarian things, they just become so tight-fisted. They want just to make trouble for the West. They just want to send all these trouble outside their own area because they know these people, if they go there, they are going to even destroy, jeopardize even their power in their own country. As well, he didn't let Mujahideen from Afghanistan to go back to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, if they want to do that, that's their duty. They are brothers in Islam. They have to help one another, not just send millions of millions overseas. It's a part of hijrah. It's a part of sending people to have the majority of the Muslim in the Europe or in the United States to turn their system and make it Islamic. To me, that's on purpose. It's not about money. Saudi Arabia is so generous to pay for everything, but they don't do it, and they have a plan behind it. It's by purpose.
Well, they've always, to me, been duplicitous. I actually think Saudi Arabia should have been on the ban, but because of America's need for foreign oil, Brigitte, it makes it somewhat politically unfeasible.
Well, yeah. It's all political at this point, but hopefully Trump is being able to get through to the King of Saudi Arabia and be able to convince them to at least work with us in setting up something for the refugees over in the Middle East. Listen, they speak the same language. They are, you know, accustomed to the same weather. Their children can go to schools that speak Arabic, that teach Arabic. They don't have to go through the cultural shock. The same type of food. There is no reason whatsoever that they need to come here. And this is where America has to exercise pressure, not only on Saudi Arabia, but on also other parts of countries in the Middle East. They have vast, you know, places of land like Jordan, like all the Arab Gulf states. And by the way, how come these men are not staying in their own country and fighting their enemy instead of running like cowards and hiding in tents in any other country in the world? Maybe they need to stand up and fight for what they believe is their own or should be their own, like their own country, instead of them coming to us and saying, hey, you know, I'm too much of a coward to fight for my own country. Why don't you take me and make me a member of yours?
You know, by the way, I made a mistake. It was the Dubai security chief. Quote, we completely support President Trump and the Muslim ban. I think you both make excellent points all across the board. I want to thank you both for being with us. Daniel Akbari, Brigitte Gabriel, we appreciate it. We have so much to get back into here today. Of course, the president last night stood up and said, sorry, Sally Yates, holdover, Obama Justice Department. She refused to enforce a legal order designed to protect the citizens of the United States, and it was approved in terms of the legality by the Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel. Goodbye. Such a good move. We'll get to your calls when we come back. I'll tell you, the hysteria is just never going to end. And California seemingly wants a showdown with President Trump. They're not going to win because sanctuary cities are in direct violation of the law. So California may prohibit local law enforcement from cooperating with federal immigration authorities, creating a border-to-border sanctuary in the nation's largest state. Okay, if they do that, we know what the consequences are going to be if you live in California. If you like your 13.5% state income tax, it's about to get bigger because the amount of money the federal government gives California proportionally is far greater than most other states, if not all of them. And that money would then therefore not be available to the people of California, just like the Attorney General, Gavin Newsom, who's dying to be president one day, the same thing with him. I mean, if he wants to put some type of barrier preventing and lawsuits preventing Donald Trump from building the wall inside of California to protect our borders, it's not going to work, number one, because the executive order prohibits that, too. So that legal showdown is, you know, they can just buy time. But at the end of the day, I don't think these are cases that they are going to ultimately win. Then you have, for example, you know, the people of Arizona seem to be pretty happy. People of Arizona want their borders secure. Then in New York, you've got, you know, Comrade de Blasio, the New York City mayor, saying it's okay to shield illegal alien drunk drivers from deportation. Now, what's drunk driving? Now, drunk driving is, you know, especially in the day and age of Uber, in the day and age of you can get a ride any place, anywhere, anytime you want for the most part, unless you're in a very small town or city. All right, so that means, you know, what does it mean? You're willing to get in the car, risk other people's lives, and then you entered the country illegally. You didn't respect our laws and sovereignty. And then on top of that, then you're drinking and driving, putting everybody else at risk. I'm not sure how well this is going to go over in Cincinnati, in Ohio, but the mayor of Cincinnati declared his municipality to be a sanctuary city. Now they're going in the opposite direction of the mayor of Miami. He said, okay, that's the law. We got to obey it. We're no longer a sanctuary city. They say now in Cincinnati they will protect illegal aliens from federal immigration officers. The mayor, John Cranley, announced alongside Muslim, Jewish, Christian religious leaders. We stand in solidarity with the immigrant community. They're not immigrants. The wall is designed that America gets to decide who will and will not come into this country. And we have every single right to do a background check on people that would like to visit our country. The door's going to be there. And then I'm getting a little sick and tired of Starbucks. I don't think I'm going to go to Starbucks anymore because the president reacting, or the CEO of the company, you know, now they're starting with their latest example of political activism, left-wing activism at Starbucks. I'm not that interested in Starbucks. You know what the sad thing is here, too? I mean, it goes beyond that. California Democrat to the First Lady, Melania Trump, show us your papers. We already know she's here legally. Nice try. Left-wing protesters, you know, while Trump is just, they're freaking out. What did I say? Every single item on Trump's agenda, there's going to be a leftist, liberal, Occupy, Black Lives Matter, code pink meltdown. This is the base of the Democratic Party. So when Donald Trump says he's going to lower taxes, even though half of all Americans that are working don't pay any federal income tax, he's going to lower rates for middle-income Americans. He's going to lower rates for corporations, lower rates for small business in the hope that we can get 95 million Americans back into the job market, the 50 million in poverty, out of poverty and back to work, the 43 million on food stamps, off of food stamps, back to work. So we're incentivizing business through multiple ways to bring their money, their dollars, and build their factories and manufacturing centers here in America. Well, that's good for the people that want to work. That's good for Americans so that they can get their dreams coming true, like a better school for their kids, a house that they can live in a safe neighborhood with a decent car, which so many people are not experiencing right now. I mean, it's gotten so bad, now they're even taking it to the Super Bowl. Headline on Mediaite, Tom Brady must denounce Donald Trump or be burned as a heretic. Wow. Anyway, you got a new genre. Alex Griswold wrote the piece. It's actually pretty well written. In the past week or so, a new genre of think piece and gotcha journalism has cropped up around quarterback Tom Brady's expression of support for Donald Trump. And it ranges from concern, trolling about whether Brady's friendship with Trump will be a problem, to op-eds outright saying that it is, often but not always. Trump's recent executive order banning immigration from seven Muslim nations is stated as a reason of particular concern. It's a coincidence, by the way, that all these pieces are coming out at a time when searches for Tom Brady are about to skyrocket and net those precious clicks. What a good point. You know, also the bizarre obsession over Taylor Swift's failure to denounce Donald Trump. What is it? Is this what it is? You got a temper tantrum. Newsbusters pointed out USA Today columnist is demanding Brady end his friendship with Trump. It's none of your business who Tom Brady's friends with. I'm friends with Donald Trump, proudly, okay? What are you going to do? You know, tie me to the stake and burn me? Huffington Post, Tom Brady's politics are more un-American than Colin Kaepernick's. I know most Americans don't like the Patriots, and I think a lot of people don't like Tom Brady. I said this at the time of so-called Deflategate. You can't deny he's one of the best quarterbacks ever to play in the NFL, and he's got four Super Bowl rings to prove it, and they're in the hunt almost every single year. And Robert Kraft, the owner, and Bill Belichick, the coach, and Tom Brady, and Gronkowski, although he's out this year, I mean, make one of the best teams. It's amazing how they're always at the top of the heap, and they're back in the Super Bowl. Matter of fact, I'm taking bets. I'm betting that the Patriots are going to win this year. Sorry, Atlanta. I know you love the Falcons, and you're not often there, and people prefer the underdog, but I don't think it's going to happen. Anybody in that room over there want to take bets? I see Jason is salivating about the idea of taking this bet. You want to take a bet on the Super Bowl?
It's one of those heart thing, you know, the heart reality things. I want Atlanta to win so badly.
Your heart wants Atlanta. Your head says it's going to be the Patriots.
Yeah, although I give Atlanta a fairly good chance to win this.
Atlanta's
game.
Got a good team. Ryan is a good quarterback.
He's really talented. Yeah, he knows Brady from his Boston College days. He actually, before he came into the league, he used to watch press conferences of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning just to see how you should act in the NFL.
Listen, I give him and the Falcons a ton of credit, but you got to give a little edge to Brady experience, Belichick experience. And look, the only two Super Bowls they lost were to Eli Manning and the New York Giants. That's it, the only two. All right, anybody else want to bet in there? Sunshine, are you betting today? Ethan, Linda?
I'm not taking that bet.
You're not taking that bet, so you think the Patriots are going to win.
But the thing is, I'm sort of like Jason. I want the Falcons to win. I would like to see Tom Brady win and Bill Belichick, but there are also liberals on the Patriots. I mean, the tight end, Bennett, is saying that if they win, he's not going to the White House because of Trump.
Well, he could stay home then. You know, I actually talked once to Robert Kraft. I don't want to give too much away, but we discussed this at the time. Remember the whole Colin Kaepernick thing was going on this year, and he said that he went to players in his locker room and said to his players, people fought, bled, and died under that flag and for that anthem, and I'm not allowing my team to – I'm not – nobody on this team. Now, if you want to go with me into the suburbs of Boston – I'll match dollar for dollar any charity you guys want that's going to help kids in any significant way. I thought that was a pretty cool thing of Robert Kraft to do. And I think a much better way than watching that idiot Colin Kaepernick put on a show all year, which dramatically impacted the NFL's ratings. People are sick and tired of seeing it. Linda, you're being quiet. No predictions?
I just don't know
anything.
Are
you watching the lingerie bowl or the puppy bowl?
I'm going to be watching puppy bowl. I don't know anything about football at all.
Well, what does Lenny say?
Lenny doesn't like football either.
Oh, my gosh.
That's why I married him.
Just over the football issue?
I mean, I could never date a man who dedicates entire days to sitting in front of a television as if it were a religion.
Oh, come on. That's just not, you cannot, by definition, be a good wife and not let your husband watch football.
Oh, man, you're going to get so killed for that.
No, it's true.
You're going down in flames, my brother.
No, it's sort of like that. You cannot
burn, baby, burn. Well, here it comes.
Now I'll reverse it. Now you cannot be a good husband and not give your wife flowers and chocolate and wonderful gifts on Valentine's Day and her birthday and Christmas. There's certain things you got to do for each other. Now, the whole idea is to serve the other person.
So let me get this right.
If your husband wants to watch football on Sundays, you need to let your husband watch football.
Okay. All right, Romeo. Let me just give you a quick lesson on this.
And on Valentine's Day, you need to wow the women in your life.
Okay, that's great. I'm sure on Valentine's Day, one day a year in the shortest month of the year, your wife will be thrilled to get chocolate and some flowers.
It's only 16 weeks.
Anywho, but all that to say, an entire season of sitting in front of the television, and it's not just Sunday anymore, right? It's Thursday nights,
Monday and Sunday nights,
and I mean,
and don't forget Saturday.
Your husband is
football.
Just getting larger and larger, eating sandwiches and drinking beer, and suddenly he's incapable of moving because something might happen.
I didn't direct you that you have to bring him his own beer. He can get his ass off the couch.
He's unable to move now because the cushion has now taken a firm shape to his behind.
between college and professional football. But this here, my larger point is this. You know, you want to know why so many people get divorced. It's like, you know, guys don't want to do anything for the women in their lives. Women don't want their guys to play golf or hang out with the boys and
I totally agree with you. I mean, listen, my husband and I both love hockey, and that was something that we decided
hockey.
That we love. Like, we both love hockey, so we go to hockey games, we watch hockey, we got Liam's first hockey stick. It's fantastic. But if I mean, I don't like football. So
Liam is
not even
chase
that I don't like football.
House with that hockey stick. Let me prepare you in advance.
Forget about it. It's a nightmare. It's a whole other conversation.
How do you have 19 dogs, 17 cats, you live in a two-bedroom apartment, and you have a baby the size of a linebacker, and how do you live in that house?
We have our own carnival. What can I say?
Oh, my
it's
God.
Fantastic.
All right, Sunshine, are you weighing in or are you staying out of this?
I love the Patriots, so I definitely think they're going to win, and I love Bill Belichick. I actually want him to be press secretary for Donald Trump.
Yeah, because he doesn't say anything.
Wouldn't that be the best White House briefing ever for him to get up there?
Yeah. Will you comment on this? No. Anything else? No. Okay. Press conference is over because he doesn't want to do it. I think it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. And it drives the media, especially Boston media, like New York media. And you got the tabloids up there, and they're going insane over the way Belichick does it.
Well, the Boston
media
is a little
more
forgiving,
I'll tell you why I think people hate
though.
Tom Brady. You want to know why people hate Tom Brady? Because he's so good at what he does. He's got a beautiful model for a wife, and people hate the fact that he's so successful. That's what I think. I think a lot of it is rooted in jealousy. What, Jason? What?
Agreed. I you will not get an argument from me. I can't stand the guy. I respect the hell out of him, but...
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah, I think players around the league despise him because, I mean, he not only has Giselle...
I don't think he had
an affair with Bridget Moynihan, for God's sakes.
Well, that was before he got married, though, so...
So you're comparing yourself as you're the Tom Brady of talk radio? You know, everyone envies you and that's why they hate you?
Actually, I think as a genre, you know, me, Mark, Rush, I think we're all just hated equally. Everybody else in this business is hated. Everybody, you know, it's funny because some of the reporters on Fox, they get heat because of me. And they're like, oh, I'm an objective journalist and they treat me like crap because of the garbage that you say. And I'm saying, well... Don't worry, my hours.
Should buy them 800 flowers to say how sorry you are.
Sorry for what?
For heaping crap on them.
There's two sides. Women should let their husbands watch football. Men should take care of their wives on all of their special days, and they should have hubby and wife day. Anyway, I don't know how we got lost, but I'm picking the Patriots big time. It's sad that they're going after Tom Brady. Now I like Tom Brady more than ever. I like the Patriots more than ever. And I'm a Jets and Giants fan. That's almost sacrilegious.
Sean Hannity, dedicated to finding the truth and upholding conservative values.
And I have every confidence that Sean is going to be doing a great job, and so people should feel some confidence about that.
This is the Sean Hannity Show.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. We'll have full, complete coverage tonight, 10 Eastern, on the Fox News Channel. Obviously, the president, 8 Eastern tonight, makes his announcement for his Supreme Court choice. My inside source tells me, in fact, he told me himself in the interview, that it will be from the list of originalists that he gave out before Election Day. So we'll have all of that. We'll have the latest on the firing of this insubordinate interim attorney general, the latest on the snowflake meltdown that never seems to end, and much more. Set your DVR, the Supreme Court choice, Hannity, tonight, 10 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. And we'll have more on that tomorrow right here on this program. Thanks for being with us. See you tonight at 10, back here tomorrow.